Diet and Nutrition for Neurodiverse Children and Young People, a Kinship Carers Victoria podcast. This podcast is part of an educational series to help kinship carers better understand and work with the various challenges they face. It was recorded and produced on Jawara Country, the land of the Jarjar Wurrung people, and we extend our ongoing respect to all Kulin Nation peoples, the traditional custodians of these lands, and pay respects to the elders both past and present, and to the deep knowledge of the land that is embedded within the Indigenous communities. What is neurodiversity? This is a term describing the idea that people experience and interact with the world in many varied ways, but there is no one right way of thinking, learning, or behaving, with these differences not viewed as deficits. The word neurodiversity refers to the diversity of everyone, but is frequently used in the context of autism spectrum disorder, ASD, as well as other neurological or developmental conditions such as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, or other issues affecting emotion, learning ability, self-control, or memory. Nikki Valentini, clinical nutritionist, functional medicine practitioner, and director of Supernature Nutrition, joined us again to speak in depth with Kinship Carers Victoria about the effect of diet and nutrition on neurodiverse children and young people. We began by asking Nikki to explain exactly what we mean when we refer to neurodiverse children and young people and why the numbers are increasing.
So we're seeing more and more neurodiversity in our communities. And that is thought to be due to the impacts of our diet, our environment, and essentially also toxins. And toxins can be from the food we eat, from the fuel that we inhale, from when we're walking down the street, things that we touch or have come into contact with, different smokes, different chemicals, industrial chemicals, which actually affect our genetic sequencing or our genetic code. In a woman's womb, there is toxic exposures there, even if she's been very careful. Things like heavy metals from the environment, like cadmium and mercury and lead, aluminium, fire retardants, and chemicals from plastics, PCBs, bisphenol A, and these toxins from plastics, which then, as a fetus is growing in utero, it can alter the way that gene expression occurs. So how genes are expressed in a body. Neurodiversity is the word we use to explain different ways that people interact with the world around them. And so it's not a discriminatory word, it's not a negative word, it's just a descriptive word. It's basically also based on what, say, in school settings and in healthcare settings, what is typical behaviour versus what is atypical behaviour. So what we find often is children or adults with neurodiversity have alterations in their gene expressions, as I mentioned before. And what this means is they often can't detox properly. Like, that's the easiest way to say that. Their ability to process and their body's ability to remove those toxins is lessened. I've actually made a list of common traits that are for neurodiverse people. So one is they have issues with time management. The other is they can hyper-focus on one task, or if they're distracted by noise, sounds, smells, and visual stimuli, they can't actually keep focused. They're often also really creative, but they can get stressed easily. And so this phrase was given in order for schools to begin to understand and help deal with children who are neurodiverse.
In previous seminars and podcasts for Kinship Carers, Nikki has spoken about the need to, wherever possible, avoid packaged foods that have artificial substances and additives in them. She explains in detail just how important this is when dealing with the diet of neurodiverse children and young people.
So in regards to how it relates to diet is that we've discovered a lot of foods that trigger or exacerbate these symptoms. So these foods are commonly foods that aren't natural. So foods that contain artificial colours and flavours, and there's many of them. Red food colouring enhances or exacerbates ADHD symptoms. So it actually scatters the thought processes in the brain. It's like yellow food colouring can really affect bedwetting, for example, can really affect sleep. Confusion, ear infections are common for kids who are eating a lot of artificial colours and flavours who are sensitive to them, which I would argue is pretty much every child. Eczema, mood swings, OCD can be seen or exacerbated when children are fuelled with these foods. Aggression and hyperactivity, which can go together as well. Usually a child who's fuelled on those foods is sort of on fire, really, and they're not sure, they can't have clear thought processes, which is very frustrating. So natural flavours are not really natural as well. So we find generally that kids with neurodiversity are very responsive to things that aren't natural. So it scatters their energy, it scatters their mind, they're kind of not knowing what to do with themselves. They act like a refined sugar in the brain. So they give the body this huge sugar type rush, which is unnatural for a body to receive. So it's, you'll see kids, you know, quick to respond, quick to anger, unpredictable or frustrated and angry with themselves. Some behaviours we might also see with neurodiverse children is depression. They have low dopamine levels. Dopamine it's a pleasure and reward, we could say, hormone as well. So it works in the body to calm and soothe. But when we're low in dopamine and we seek these foods that give us this instant rush, we are dumped off that dopamine high very, very quickly. When you see a child reacting to a food, they've come up with this dopamine rush and they're seeking dopamine because they're low in dopamine. I just add there that we also know that too much screen time, which a lot of these kids really crave, lowers dopamine. And that crash is where anger and lashing out or irrationalities, or there's this peaking and troughing of these kind of natural neurotransmitters in an unnatural way.
Given the issues that neurodiverse children and young people face, especially in regard to overstimulation, being overwhelmed, stressed, and angry, we asked Nikki what foods are beneficial for managing these challenges.
We would always say a diet of food that your grandmother would recognise, which I would have mentioned this in other podcasts too. So not packaged foods, foods that are just the form in which they come, and whether you've cooked them, baked them into something else, even natural sugar is better. So if you've baked something with some natural sugar in it, it's better than having anything with colourings and preservatives and natural colours, flavours, all of that. Foods that contain B vitamins are generally really good foods. So we specifically look at green leafy vegetables in regards to that. So even if you mixed spinach into pasta, spaghetti bolognese sauce or that kind of thing, sneak green vegetables in if they don't like them, or make them fun. Sometimes we'll use vitamin B6 to help, because that actually builds dopamine levels in the body, and I find it incredibly effective in my clinic. As long as you are buying one that is of fairly good quality without too many additives, you have to really look at additives for supplements that you're buying over the counter. For these children as well, because their sensitivity levels are high. Generally grounding foods, oats is a great food. It contains a lot of B vitamins and it's quite calming. Getting enough carbohydrates and protein, you know, not avoiding them, but not having those foods out of balance. I have some people ask at the seminars about, my child only really wants to eat mince meat. And I say, good. That's probably the best option. You know, it's better than eating 2-minute noodles all day. If they want to eat mincemeat, give them mincemeat. It's like a vitamin pill, really. It doesn't contain all the B vitamins, but it contains a lot of things. So even starting there is a good option. I do like the idea for parents to use reward systems with children, but not be forcing them to eat anything. a day of food or a plate of food for a child should be a third protein, a third carbohydrate, and a third other vegetables, green vegetables. And in that, there's some fat. It's a slightly newer research, but seed oils is a problem. You're better off using olive oil for kids. Seed oils are very inflammatory. And we also see that neurodiverse children are very susceptible to inflammation. I mentioned before, and we often use the term brain on fire. And so brain on fire can be a response for a child to eating gluten because it's an allergen for them, or eating dairy because it's an allergen for them. It's not all kids. It's a lot of kids with neurodiversity that gluten will cause an excited reaction in the brain, and that excitatory reaction is where their focus scatters. And when the focus scatters is when you'll get reactions. You'll get, you know, anger reactions or sadness and depression and these kind of things. It's dysregulated emotions.
In previous podcasts on diet and nutrition, we haven't yet touched on the importance of fluid intake. Nikki outlines how vital proper hydration is for good health and well-being, and has some excellent advice on which sorts of drinks to add and those to avoid.
So fluid intake, or drinks for children and young people, are really, really important from the perspective of balancing the minerals in the body, but also the way that our cells behave. And we have cells for everything. Our body is made up of cells. So we have cells in the brain, and we have cells in the liver and the heart and the skin and the muscle, and they're all similar and different and have similar and different functions. But when we are dehydrated, these cells actually don't function as well. We have ways to measure intracellular and extracellular fluid, and when there's not enough intracellular, that is fluid inside cells, we find that their operations, which are all around making clean energy, which are all around printing out genes, because we're continuously printing our genes through our lifetime, that is reduced. And so it's sort of a withering, you know, you can sort of liken it to a plant that hasn't been watered for a while and it starts to wither and can get some crusty bits on the end tips of the leaves and things, and that is actually a reduction in the function of the plant. And the same with a person, we start to withdraw our resources from certain parts of our bodies when we're dehydrated, really dehydrated. Everything starts to struggle. That's our liver and our kidneys and our heart and our brain. So if you think about electricity and water, how water is a conductor for electricity. We have a lot of electricity inside our bodies, naturally occurring all the time, as it should, and we use minerals for this, and that electricity is transported through the water, and we need that to be happening in order for us everything to be firing in a clean way. So what kind of fluid is best? I'm always going to say water. Are soft drinks okay? Well, no. Those drinks are like dynamite for kids. I can't say anything else about it except for trying to, you know, look for alternatives that are not those, because they're all full of colours. They're completely saturated with sugar. They cannot take any more sugar. And with neurodiverse children, because of the way that they were born, they tend to not detoxify their bodies naturally, I mentioned before. Continuously taking in foods and things that are like toxins, they accumulate. It actually makes them worse over time. You know, if you think about a sponge, they're just taking it in and they never get it out. You know, my job is often to help kids get this stuff out of their bodies. That's how I work with kids who are neurodiverse. But they're taking it in and they're just filling with it and filling with it and filling with it. So it's not a case of, oh, they came off that crazy high they had from all that sugar. It's like there was another insult to the body that they hung on to. And so often you'll see kids, as they get older, become more and more disconnected or sick in different ways because they're not actually removing this stuff from their bodies. So back to the fluid and the alternatives of drinks. Freshly pressed natural juices are okay. Juice concentrates are not really okay. It's actually not natural to be drinking a juice concentrate, but if you were drinking, you know, an orange juice that is just orange juice, for some kids that's a big sugar rush, for other kids that's okay. Sometimes you can, you know, making a drink with lemon and honey in it and water, or fizzy water or something like that, and getting them used to having water, just getting them used to it.
Growing bodies need constant fueling, with snacks making up a significant portion of dietary intake for children and young people. Nikki goes through her list of recommended healthy snack foods to include.
So fruit can be okay, but I generally would say for these kids, protein, because protein balances them out in regards to sugar rushes. So if they're okay to eat nuts, and that's really varied in this day and age, then nuts are a good choice. Cakes made with almonds, flour and these kind of foods for some kids, with preferably no sugar in it. There's lots and lots of recipes you can find online for sugar-free snacks and cakes. Sometimes, you know, crackers and dips, just plain rice crackers with hummus, there's a bit of protein in there. If they can tolerate dairy, there's dairy-type dips, feta. And I would say that in regards to snacks with kids, it's about forming good habits. Once they form good habits with snacks, that's what they'll go to. They don't have to think about it. Oh, I like carrot sticks with hummus, or I like to eat olives, or I like to eat, you know, some nuts and I feel quite good on that. Or sometimes eating some fruit and yogurt can be a good snack for kids, with, if they can tolerate nuts again, with some nuts on the top. And that feels like a pretty special treat. Things like jerky, so that's a great snack for kids. Celery and peanut butter, you know, some kids don't love the celery part, but some love it. And if you just make that regular, they're the things and they're on hand, you know, even brainstorming with another carer or brainstorming with someone else, you'll find things that really work, and that then you can have them in the house and you don't have to overthink it because life's busy, right?
Any carer knows how difficult and frustrating it can be to get children and young people to try new or healthy foods. Nikki has some excellent tips for introducing variety into neurodiverse children and young people's diets, and how to manage aversion to different textured foods and strong tastes.
First part of that, in regards to variety in diets for these children, is not making a fuss. Introducing variety should just come in. Oh, look, here it is. And not making it, you have to eat this, even if you don't like it, none of that sort of stuff. Putting a selection out is often a great idea, all good. Not having like the bowl of Smarties and then the healthy options all in one, because we know where they'll go. Trying to encourage curiosity, having it be fun. You can validate their concerns with eating, because there's sensory food issues with kids, and so not discussing with them as in giving them a ton of choice, but discussing with them, hey, I'd like to try this, what do you think, would you like it in this way or that way, or what about if we grated those carrots, do you think that would be yummy to try, and should we have a go at that? Just playing with different ways and having them go, oh yeah, let's explore our options here, let's see what we can do, rather than here it is, you'd have it like this, you know, oh no, you don't like a raw carrot because you didn't like that bit. But if you make it a positive experience, that can be quite good. There's a little list that I have here around changing foods for kids and getting them to try different foods. So using the senses, like, let's smell this food. What does it smell like? Is it good? Do you like that smell? Does it smell sweet, or, you know, does it smell sour? Or, you know, you can sort of explore the qualities with kids. Can talk about the colours and go, oh, look at, you know, often arranging an amazing colourful plate of things can be exciting for kids, you know. Kids really like colours and shapes and things on a little plate. So I can, in my mind, I'm imagining, you know, after school they've come home and there's carrots chopped, they're in little rounds or something, and then there's celery sticks and they're super long and thin, and then there's a little bit of dip that's got something else around it, like seeds that make a little sunflower shape, or berries that are in a beautiful little pile or scattered around the edge of the plate, and having a conversation about it that is like, oh, look at that, you know, what do you think about that colour? Do you like eating like this? Just nice conversations about it. Keep presenting the foods as you can. I often call that the trying plate. Definitely making food fun and never making a fuss when they don't try it, but you have to keep trying. And I would generally say, depending on your child, observing whether praise works after they've tried something or not. Because some kids prefer you not to make comment if they've just tried that little thing. Giving lots of options and not playing too heavily into it, but going, oh, good on you, you tried that. How'd you find it? What do you think? Is that okay? Or, yeah, keeping it light. And as for vegetarian kids, if they like things like falafels or veggie burgers, but it's really the protein aspect that you need to be getting into them, because the protein helps them balance the sugar in their bodies. If they get adequate levels of protein, they will be less inclined to be craving sweet stuff, which is the stuff that sends them off. So it is tricky making sure they're getting enough protein, but strong tastes, I would generally, depending on what that sort of strong taste is, I avoid that stuff as much as possible. But textures is an interesting one. You can find different ways to eat the same vegetable according to the texture. We know that neurodiverse kids often want beige coloured foods. It's quite soothing for them and it feels simple. Or they just kind of will want to eat meat, and that's quite good too. With the beige coloured foods though, they're looking for dopamine. Things like soft pastas and mashed potato and this stuff that kids love. But if you can mix anything else into it that's a little bit of another vegetable, like peas or corn or herbs, for some kids they'll like it, herbs in things. With textures, sometimes if kids are very adverse and their diet is extraordinarily narrow, I usually work on a program of one different food a week. That is, so if it was mashed potato that they were eating a lot of and just wanted, I'd mash a different vegetable and just work with that vegetable. Then I'd make sure that vegetable was very softly cooked but still formed. Yeah, but going gently with them and sort of, again, taking that exploratory approach, particularly with children under 10, that works. Going, oh, what do you think about that texture? What does that remind you of? Or just playing with it and playing with curiosity around the food. But definitely not making food an issue or making food a burden. And behind all of that, sometimes there's an issue of the biome, the microbiome in the gut. Often kids that are neurodiverse, we see different balances of that bacterial microbiome. And what they have in there is bacteria that crave sugars and crave carbs, which are sugars. Sometimes working with a probiotic can help change kids' tastes and their hunger to help them choose more diversely.
So what advice would Nikki give to carers who are short on time and need inexpensive options when shopping for food?
There are some frozen meals that you can buy that are low or have no preservatives. Those things can be expensive though. It depends on whether you're looking at time or budget, but there's also, you know, frozen vegetables. They're a really good option. There's nothing wrong with having frozen vegetables in the freezer that you can just get out if you microwave them quickly and, you know, add some salt and lemon and butter to them. That's really yummy. Generally, looking at as much as you can, though, still at Whole Foods. Like, whether it's you buy peanut butter and apples or peanut butter and celery and have these kind of snacks, rice crackers that are plain and dips, you know, they're quick and easy. And the other thing I'd say, if you have the chance, is to try and do some batch cooking and freezing stuff yourself. You know, making simple bolognese sauces that have lots of vegetables in them, whether they be lentil bolognese or meat bolognese, and freezing those portions and then quickly getting them out on weeknights. And if you've grated in some carrot and zucchini, it's hidden in there and they can't even see it. Good. Yeah, those kind of options I would say are the best, you know, and there's lots and lots of resources online for foods for kids, and I could possibly give you a couple to put in the notes attached to the podcast. Easy recipe ideas.
Finally, we sought Nikki's advice on the importance of establishing and maintaining a mealtime routine for neurodivergent children and young people.
Mealtime routines are absolutely so important. Anything variable there will cause more questioning and more discomfort with these kids. Routine is just really great for these kids. And I would say trying to set up a routine where, even if it's not exactly the same time every night, it's the way you sit down to eat. So eating together, putting the food in the middle of the table maybe, and just having it be a very nice experience and a fun experience. Oh, this is what we do. We sit down and this is a fun time for us, and we talk, or we have routines around catching up about our day, you know, these kind of things is vital. So then they're not so focused on, oh, I'm scared of this food, I don't want this, or, oh, you know, I just want this food. Taking it away from all being emphasised around the food, but the culture of your eating, being together, trying to chat. You know, we used to do one in our house all around. Everyone needs to say one good thing about their day, you know, and for some, sometimes it's hard to think of, but generally you can joke around and find something, because essentially food is a great place to connect. Even though you might not see it instantly with them on the outside, like, oh, I don't want to do this, I just want to keep watching the screen, connecting is one way. It's one way of that we receive pleasure. And so it's another way to help regulate that dopamine. So it doesn't come from the screen, it comes from connecting in a positive way. So it's a big job for a carer or a parent to always be the one that's providing the, this is a nice experience. It's a big job, but even if you can find strategies in small ways to say, isn't it great the sun's out, let's eat outside, or whatever it is, you know, you can always find the smallest thing. Just the smallest thing that can mean connection.
Look out for our next podcast in this series to be published at the beginning of April 2024. This podcast was made possible by generous support from the Department of Families, Fairness and Housing and the Carer Cafe.